When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturers of the finest knife heat treat ovens available. Find your next heat treat oven at evenheat-kiln.com.
Welcome to the show. It's the all new Knife Talk, and today is the first episode with all three presenters. So myself is here, Jeff is here.
Have mercy, baby.
And Mareko's here.
How's it going, everybody?
The three amigos.
Well, welcome to Knife Talk. I just want to say real quick, we had a lot of nice comments from the listeners from last week's show, and I just want to thank all of them for, you know, being very supportive to us and writing nice things. It meant a lot. We saw everything, and, you know, we're trying to work something out here. So I appreciate your patience while we try to work out some, you know,
yeah,
moderately good entertainment.
Yeah. At the moment, we're three guys in a cupboard, you know? We're in cupboards with shitty little microphones trying to entertain and hopefully to teach you guys something, you know?
Yeah. Moderately entertaining, Knife Talk. That's our new thing.
Yeah.
So what have we been up to this week? What you guys been up to?
So I had a crazy week. I actually was in last weekend. I was with my buddies Cliff Dufton, John Ariane, and Jesse Savage and Carrie Savage, and we were a blacksmithing team that we're now called the Modern Forge, and we did a demonstration for the whole weekend, exhibition at Maker's Faire in New York City for 90,000 people, and we had hydraulic presses there, we had anvils, we had every tool you could need in a blacksmith shop, and we were forging hammers and axes and bottle openers, and we were squishing steel, and I was making knives, and I had a loudspeaker, and I was yelling at people. It was fantastic. So we had a ball, and we won, and... We won 7 Editor's Choice Blue Ribbons for our exhibition.
Nice.
We were pretty pumped. That's right.
Very good.
Highly decorated.
Very good.
Highly decorated.
I did see your pictures with Jimmy DiResta there and so on, and you all had you like show dogs at Crufts, you know? You all had these little ribbons saying how great you are.
Yeah, you guys killed it.
It was good because, you know, we were the only, you know, I've been to this thing before, and Maker's Faire's, and don't be offended, listeners, but some of those people are nerds, and it was all 3D printers and drones, and then everything was usually strapped to a snow blower, or like a leaf blower. There are like leaf blowers everywhere. And you know, we're going to have to do a different episode to just talk about it, because I got a lot of funny stories. There was a lot of yelling. I had a fallout with some life-sized pink R2-D2 I yelled at for trying to steal our crowd. And
we
had all sorts of great little, well, you know, pink R2-D2's got to find their own crowd. Don't start banging into ours. So we'll have to do a different story on that. But it was an awesome time.
Where did you get the power for the press from?
The people at Maker's Faire are incredible. The staff was amazing, and they talked to Cliff, and they said, "What do you need?" And Cliff says, "I need 220," and they had 220 ready for us. They gave us a giant tent. They gave us this like center stage. They're going to give us a bigger space next year. We were asked to go to this Maker's Faire in Korea, and that ain't happening. And we got like hit up by all these people, and well, you want us to come? You're talking about like 4,000 pounds of equipment you got to ship. And,
yeah.
All of a sudden things go from, you know, queens to crazy quick, and, you know, you got to pay.
Yeah.
Poor Sunset had a schlep. Sunset Cliff had to schlep a ton of stuff, and it was intense. But we had a blast. Mm.
Well, it sounds like you've had fun, but whereas this week for me, it's been another week away from the shops. It's been a nightmare. So, you know, as most people know who listen to the show, I've recently moved to France. And, you know, to set up the business here, I had to do a 5-day accounting course in French. Oh. I don't speak French, but can you imagine how boring an accounting course is in French when you don't speak the language? So that finished yesterday. So today is my first day back in the shop for almost 2 weeks.
How do you manage that without speaking the language? Do you have a translator right there or?
Yeah, an app.
Oh my God.
I speak very basic French, very basic. Enough to sort of get by normally. But when they're talking sort of accounting terms and, you know, that it's boring enough in English, you know. It was terrible.
I can't think of anything worse.
But it's been done. It's been done. It's out of my hair. That's it. That's it.
Holy cow.
Yeah, I can't even imagine.
Oh.
Yeah.
Brutal. I apologize. I apologize and terrible.
So, Mareko, you've got I think you've had a hell of a few weeks.
You're back.
Yeah, mine's not just a week. It's been the last few weeks. I just got back to Connecticut. We're recording on Friday, so I got back yesterday, evening. It's been 3 weeks of I actually listened to last week's episode, and you were calling it so I've been calling it the Tour de Couture. I think I'm saying that right.
Couture.
But essentially it's like a
Couture.
Sorry. So it's a playoff Tour de France, but essentially, yeah, Tour de Couture. Going around talking to people about knives, working with people, doing knife stuff, sharing some of my knowledge, learning from others as well. And so I spent the last 2 weeks in Hawaii hanging out with Neil Kamimura, and then the week before that, I was in LA kind of schlepping around, meeting some great talented chefs, and hanging out with my friend William Brigham, who's the Artificery on Instagram, who does some insane stainless Damascus work. And it was very, very informative. It was a great opportunity to network with people, and especially like in the last 2 weeks, spending time with Neil. You know, it's not very often that you can just kind of drop into somebody's world and spend 2 weeks with them, nonstop, essentially. How often? And, you know, we came out of it, you know, great buddies. You know, sometimes people want to tear each other's throats out. But, you know, we had a great time.
What were you working on? Were you sort of collaborating on a knife, or was it just a sort of teaching exercise?
Yeah, so the main goal for me coming out and spending time with Neil was for me to help. Yeah, he's done a little bit of Damascus work himself, but it helps so much to have somebody, whatever it is you're learning, to have a coach kind of right there next to you who has a lot of experience with it. And so we went through it my way. We did no flux welding. We used all of his equipment, so after I left, you know, he can turn around and reproduce these results on his own. And he actually did a couple test runs of his own before I left. But I just kind of stood back and watched him do his thing, and he killed it. He did great. He picked that up really quick. He also, you know, he does a lot of, he's in Hawaii, so a lot of his book background is with like hunting and fishing, and a lot of his friends do that. And so the knives he was building was more of like a bushcraft style. So they have a bit more of a beefy geometry, a more robust geometry, which we'll probably get talking about a little bit later about how that plays and how well things cut. But he's wanting to learn how to do chef's knives. He's made chef's knives, but unfortunately they don't necessarily perform like chef's knives. And so he and I worked on geometry, and essentially me kind of standing over his shoulder and saying thinner. And he's like, "Whoa, how's this?" And I say, "Thinner," and just kept pushing it. And we just went straight up balls out. And we went, the first thing we did when we made the Damascus, we spent 3 days making a mosaic Damascus. We didn't fuck around with, we didn't
That's
mess
fine.
Around.
That's fine.
We didn't mess around with, some of the kind of more straightforward patterns. We just went straight to doing mosaics. We spent 3 days making a mosaic. He and I kind of took turns going back and forth between heats and forging on it, and just making sure he was getting a good feel for how the material should move, what kind of temperature it should be at, how, like, when to stop. That's kind of sometimes the trickier part. And we came out with a really nice solid chunk of mosaic Damascus that we both ended up forging blades out of, and we made chef's knives out of them. And so yeah, so and that was, he was actually always, I guess he's been skeptical about mosaics and how well they kind of hold together, and he was blown away after the last round of welding. You know, we pretty much just treated it like mono steel. He forged it just like mono steel because he wanted to see like what could it actually handle, and he beat the shit out of it just like he would with like 1084 or 1095 or something like that. Forged out great, and it just completely blew his mind. Kind of you know, reaffirmed to me that my process actually works. And so yeah, he's gonna be making moves, kind of in the chef's knife genre, I think.
Nice.
Just making better performing blades.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, I know that based on when the last episode that Craig had him on, that his grandfather was a blacksmith making. If I'm right, he's making sugarcane knives, right? He was forging sugarcane knives.
Yeah, he was. Exactly. Yep.
That's incredible to have that kind of generational connection.
Yeah, I think it was his great grandfather, but yeah, it's insane that he re-registered his great grandfather's like business name, so he's actually operating underneath the same name that his great grandfather was using like almost 100 years ago or something.
That's amazing.
Like
that's amazing.
So cool to have that history, and it was really eye opening, you know. Going like you did the Maker's Faire, but anytime. Like going to a hammer-in or even going to blade show, getting to see some people's work firsthand or working alongside them or just talking shop. Like it reignites like the fire inside of me. But to see him work, to talk to him about his view of the craft and just to see how personally driven he is made me feel like a fucking schlep. Like,
oh, come on.
He is so driven. It's super intense, and it's definitely his personality just to be that way. Like, he's up 4 o'clock in the morning. He's working until like sometimes 6, 7, 8 o'clock at night. He is just so driven. He wants to learn and absorb, and he picks things up so quickly.
But that's true mark of a blacksmith or someone who really has that passion, because, you know, it's a compulsion when you're a sculptor or when you're a blacksmith or a bladesmith or you find something that you love. If you don't have that compulsion, it's like, well, you know, it's fine. But I mean, those are the guys who really, they work harder than anybody else and they drive to succeed. And it's really, you can see it. You can totally see it. Now, sure. I just want to just gloss over one. You glossed over some monster news. Yeah, you did. Glossed it over. That's fine. I understand. You know, you're back from Hawaii, all that, you know, pineapples and Moco Loco. But you also were the first bladesmith to be on the Joe Rogan Experience.
That's true. Yep. I was on Joe Rogan Experience. So I landed in L.A. I left Connecticut, landed in L.A. with 2.5 hours of sleep. I went straight to Joe Rogan's studio. And, you know, you walk into the studio. It's an amazing space. It's huge. It's probably close to 8 or 10,000 square foot portion of the building that he has. And essentially, it's a straight up warehouse.
Jeff's cupboard is exactly the same.
Keep going.
You walk in, you see that if you follow Joe Rogan, his Instagram or anything like that, you see he gets a lot of pictures with his guests in front of this giant werewolf that somebody made him. So you walk in the entry and it's right there in this kind of 2,000 square foot foyer. Like, his foyer to the warehouse is 2,000 square feet, and it's just nothing but the werewolf straight in front of you. And a giant elk rack, like antler rack, right above the wolf. But then, you know, to the left is his studio. He's got a little kitchenette. He's got a green room. And then on the backside, he's got this huge gym that's more well-equipped than a lot of, like, 24-hour fitness gyms that I've ever seen. And then he's got also a garage and a jujitsu mat and a sauna there. It's like the ultimate man cave. And a pool table. If it was a knife maker, you just add a blacksmithing portion or a bladesmithing area. It'd be set.
Oh.
So I was just wondering, how does that work? Do you get there, you just sit in the chair and you just start riffing? Or do you sort of get to know each other and build up some sort of, chemistry beforehand, because everybody just seems so relaxed on his show, you know?
Yeah. So I got there. He had just finished actually a conversation with a politician from New York. And so I just showed up, and I think he was doing some archery stuff, before I had arrived, and he just kind of walked in, said, "What's up?" I had like all my luggage and everything with me. I also brought some sharpening gear for him, so I want to make sure I unload that and give that to him as well. But kind of chatted a little bit in the green room, just introduced each other, and then we went pretty much straight into the studio. And we did kind of what we did here just before we started recording. It was just like I started talking a little bit, and he said, "Stop, yeah. Save it for the show." And we just started talking. There was maybe a total of 20 words exchanged before.
Well, it's interesting because I know that, you and I talked about it beforehand, and we were texting, and I was, most of the people in this community were so proud for you and excited to hear you. And it was like, it was exciting for all of us. And it was like a victory for all of us, because we were all like, one of our guys is on that show that we all listen to. And it was really like this experience. And I felt like, I was getting messages all day. "When's he going on? When's he going on? When's he going on?" I'm like, "I don't know. He's texting. He's in Minneapolis, and I have no idea." And everyone's following you around. I'm getting these messages. "One time we want to watch." Everybody wanted to watch it live. And it was just one of these great, was like you were there with everybody on your back. We were all, your whole community was totally behind you 1,000%. And that was really, it was a special thing. And I just have one quick question. And I know you were nervous. You had to have been nervous.
Yeah.
And you don't have to ask that question. But in the beginning, I was watching and I was working on some things and I was watching live. And I just felt like he said, you guys started talking about Dungeons and Dragons dice. And then all of a sudden, it was the first 10 minutes in, he goes, "You're a nerd, aren't you?" And all I could think of is, why, he's already nervous. Why are you blowing him up right now? Did that rattle you a little bit?
No, not at all. I was like, yeah, I don't know. I've always had a weird collection of knowledge and information that doesn't necessarily bring any value to me. I just know a lot of weird shit. And that was one of those things when I corrected him right there in the middle of the show, "Oh, actually, they're like value holders and stuff." He's like, "Oh, you know what these are. You're a fucking nerd." I was like, "Yeah, I'm no nerd about some shit." But yeah, it was interesting going in that podcast. I definitely thought about the fact that that essentially I was going to be the first representative of this craft, and generally speaking, like blacksmithing and craftsman work in general. One of the first. I think he's actually had a couple other craftspeople,
not like knife makers
or others, on the show before. Not knife makers, no. And so, it actually kind of reminded me of the first time I was on Forge and Fire. Like, all I kept thinking in my head is like, I have to do right by everybody else. I'm kind of like representing by proxy, and so I went in and just tried to do the best I could to answer any questions he had in as concise and simple of a way, and tried to just go with the flow. Because, the biggest thing I was nervous about is just not being able to carry the conversation. But I realized, like, that's not my job. That's actually his job. And he does a great job of carrying conversation, asking interesting questions, and just keeping the conversation going. So once I realized I can just let go of that, all I had to do was answer questions. Yeah.
You did a great job. Great job, yeah. Definitely. So have you found that things have changed for you since? I mean, are you getting more inquiries? Is the phone off the
hook? Definitely more inquiries. Fortunately, no, because nobody really knows how to get a hold of me by phone. But I prefer emails anyways, just because it's easier to keep everything organized. But I had over 200 new DMs in my Instagram. Yeah, fortunately, people don't know how to get a hold of me by phone. Otherwise, my phone probably would be ringing off the hook. I do have a business number, but But fortunately, it's been a lot through email and DMs on Instagram, and me like redirecting people back to my email. But yeah, I got like I think about 10 or 15,000 new followers in the first week, and I think it's grown by about 30,000 followers last 3 weeks. Yeah, so it's been pretty crazy, and yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel. It's weird because I almost kind of have this like sense of like imposter syndrome, like why the fuck, like why is it me that this is all happening to, but at the same time I'm just trying to continue to do good work and trying to represent the craft well and everybody else that goes along with it.
Yeah.
So
are your books currently open? Are you taking advantage of this now?
Yeah. So I didn't think that part through, and so I just had closed my books at the end of August, and then I realized, oh shit, after I go on Joe Rogan, I'm going to have a bunch of new people inquiring, and we did. But just before I went on the show, I was like, I think I need to reopen the books. So we opened them through the end of September, but right now I'm like backlog 3 years, so I'm just taking in the last few inquiries, and at the end of this month, and it's closing down. But it's an interesting numbers game to see how many people hear, how many people reach out, and then how many people actually end up following through. And it's such a tiny percentage. I think the podcast, or sorry, like the video version on YouTube of the podcast with Joe has garnered like 500,000 views. But I have like 10 new inquiries, or sorry, 10 new orders. And I probably had like 100 new inquiries. So, it's just an interesting.
All right, last question.
Yeah,
this is the question everybody wants to know.
Oh,
and that's what everybody wants to know, baby.
Let's hear it.
You smoke on that joint, boy?
No.
You smoke on that joint, boy?
I didn't. So,
do you have a little bit of puff puff?
No.
Come on, baby. Answer the question. You have a little puff puff?
No, I definitely drank a few beers though, and it was by around the third beer and about 45 minutes in, I finally started to relax. Not be so nervous, but no, fortunately, I would not be operational if I had smoked any weed at all.
That was a good move. Strong move.
Yeah.
Leave that to Elon, yeah?
Strong move. Well, yeah. And I think, Joe had a comedy show that night, and so I think he was also kind of making sure, because he was driving his sweet little Porsche over there. I don't think he wants to be driving under the influence. So, you know, he and I hung out, no weed. Just chatted, and that was it. Sadly, he had to cut it short.
He's got a big comedy special, hasn't he, coming up on Netflix? I think next week it's being released.
Is it being released next week? Yeah. Yeah, I've heard him talking about it, yeah.
And you were that warm-up act for old Elon Musk.
Right.
It was a good interview, but lost a lot of juice.
Yeah, I heard that podcast. It's interesting to listen to him talk and just his cadence. But if you think about it, I mean, he's got a lot on his shoulders. Like, he kind of has to be careful about how he says stuff. You can't be Jeff Fader running around like a chicken with his head cut off, screaming at people and pink R2-D2s.
I'm fucking controlled. I think that this is a measured tone. I think this is all calculated.
Yeah.
I'm not chicken with a head cut off.
I
ain't smoking weed on Joe Rogan, that's for sure.
Don't.
But given the opportunity.
Oh, I will. I'll fucking, no problem. We'll puff puff, baby. Come on.
So what's the current projects? What we all currently working on?
Cubans. Yeah, I was doing an update for my customers. I did a video update for my customers, and I finished the heat treatment last week, and I started grinding everything last week, and then this week I was doing grinding, thinning everything down, and cutting in the clips, and just hard work. It was a lot of hard work. That's fine.
What about you, Mareko? What's on the bench this week?
Yeah, for me, I have some wedding bands I need to finish up. I have a stainless steel Wootz knife that I'm working on. Mm. Steel made by my talented shopmate, Mr. Peter Swarsbert. And it's forged integral. It's all out of Koa. It's got actually the Koa handle and the Koa Saya. We're all from the same block of wood, so there's going to be an interesting game of making the grain match up as best as I can so that the grain from the handle flows out into the Saya. It should be an interesting build. It's always new challenges. Nice. I think I know how I'm going to do it. I've just never done it before with such tight tolerances like this. Because essentially, you got the saw curve, and that's about it to play with. And otherwise, you just got to get everything to match up nicely.
So I'm going to be on some chef knives. So since I started this whole steak knife project that I was doing, that's all I've had to sell for the last, probably 6 months now. So I've been working on some chef knives. I don't even have a chef knife of my own here in the house at the moment. So I'm using one of Florentine's knives, Thomas, chef knives.
Love that guy.
I know that you've seen it, but that video that's, that he's just done, that documentary.
I just heard about it myself through Jeff's stories. It's good little,
good little doc.
It's so beautiful. The shop that he's got, it's incredible. But yeah, I've been using one of his knives for the last 6 months, which I bought a while back. But I don't even have one of my own chef knives. I need to get some chef knives sorted, especially ready for Christmas orders, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing, trying to get geared up for holiday season.
Yes, yeah. So I put out 20 spots. I'm only going to do 20 spots for, for pre-Christmas delivery.
Right.
About half of them have gone now. But yeah, I think they're all going to be chef knives, but it looks so far anyway.
Nice.
It's what people want, If you can have one knife, you have a chef knife.
Yeah, good on you.
So last week we started something. We started, Jeff went into a deep dive, didn't you, Jeff, about can't even say the word.
Yeah.
Spheroidization.
Right.
Is that what it is?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not even going to say it. That's right.
I was just going to notice you weren't even going to try it. Spheroidization.
That's right. That's it. Boom.
It was a deep dive anyway. So Jeff did this big investigation and he come out with the goods. So we thought we'd try something new. So this week we're introducing
Jeff Investigates.
That's horrible. That's an insult. That's an insult. It's an outrage and an insult. Jingles. This is what it comes down to. I'm sitting in a closet listening to goddamn jingles. All right. Well, that's how
I'm excited. It's got me excited.
Well, then you have very low thresholds for excitement because I hope they're not more. I'm sure there are.
So, what have you been investigating, Jeff?
Well,
what's been there? Your thing this week.
Well, it's interesting because there's started on two things. So you sent us a message saying that you'd signed up for a blacksmithing class. And
yes,
we're very pumped for you. And it was great. And I think that it's a great experience. And I'm a huge fan. I've been a blacksmith for a long time. I used to work at Fine Architectural Metalsmiths, which was the business, which was the fabrication end of the Center for Metal Arts. I was a professional blacksmith and I love it. I love everything about it. And you said, well, what hammer should I buy? And what I said was, don't buy anything. Because what happens is you buy something because you're excited to buy this tool, and then all of a sudden, it's something, the first one you buy is never the one you're really going to use. And I said, probably whatever they have at the class is probably what's best to use. And the interesting thing was that it coincided with me going on a maker fair, and I had to pack a bag to get on the train to go to Queens, and I just, I was bringing all the tongs I could use to make whatever forging knives, and I brought piles of tongs, and I cut piles of steel and make knives. And then I was just like, well, how many hammers should I bring? So I pulled out all the hammers that I use, and I was like, well, bag is too heavy. I'm only going to bring one hammer. And I looked at my hammer rack, and I thought, you have one hammer to bring for 2 days. And so what I did was I thought, well, this is a kind of interesting. So what would I use? And then I picked the hammer that I learned on, which is a Hoffe hammer. And it was the right decision, and it was the knife that I used the entire weekend, 2 full days, felt great, and blah, blah, blah. So after, listening to what you said, and then based on my experience, what I thought was I'd reach out to some blacksmiths and, see what, if they could pick one hammer to use, what would it be? And I'm totally overwhelmed I reached out to a lot of people, like 12 blacksmiths and bladesmiths. And these people are people that I respect. These are people that I know. These are people that who have been my teachers, who I've, bought hammers from, whatever. These are all, every single one on this list is incredible. But the real thing is they all answered me within a couple of hours of me sending this email. And that's this community, the blacksmithing community, the bladesmithing community, whatever. It's terrific. And these are all people, young, some are young, some are old, some have a certain amount of experience. And but one thing's for sure, every single one of them reached out and they gave me an awesome answer. Some of them are quick and some of them are long. But basically what I wanted to do was I wanted to just kind of talk about hammers a little bit, but talk about what these guys, the kind of hammers that these guys use, and then some of the attributes. So when, you know, if you're a young guy getting into bladesmithing or you're blacksmithing and you're looking into buying knives, these are kind of the questions. These are the kind of knives that maybe you should think about.
Cool. Perfect for me. Perfect for me. Just about to start a blacksmithing course. Need a hammer. You've done the work for me. This is great.
Well, you know, when I start reading off who these people are, you're getting, you know, you're getting the best of the best here. So, I'm going to try to read off some of them quick. I don't want this thing to, and feel free to kind of pipe in when you have the chance if you have questions in regards to it.
Yeah.
So the first guys I talked to were my boys at Modern Forge, The Modern Forge on Instagram, Sunset Forge, New Jersey, Jesse Savage Blacksmith, and Cliff Dufton, CJ Dufton. Those are really awesome blacksmiths. And they're blacksmiths. They're not bladesmiths. So and we're going to have to talk about the difference between that. So the Sunset, John Ariani told me that the question is what if you're on a desert island and you have only one hammer, you can only use one hammer, what would it be? So Sunset said he'd like a 3.5 pound rounding hammer. Jesse said he would do a 2.5 pound cross peen. And Cliff said he would say 2.5 to 3 pound cross peen. So those were all pretty, you know, pretty standard, you know, the difference between a rounding hammer and a cross peen. I'll get to that a little bit on the later side. So then I reached out to Lynn Ray, Master Bladesmith. He's LWRHEA on Instagram. He's actually he's an incredible bladesmith because he's kind of redesigned the concept of the blacksmith knife, where you're not really putting on a handle. What you're doing is you're forging the rein down, and then you're kind of riveting it back. You're twirling it around and riveting. If you go to, you know,
it's self-handled. Self-handled blacksmith.
Perfect.
Knife.
But his connection, the connection that he makes is perfect. And this is what he wrote. He was very specific. I prefer a 2.25 pound cross peen, the old 1800 to 1850s pattern. It's important to me, the handle length and the shape. I make my own from kiln dried hickory. Mine are a couple inches longer than a modern hardware handle and slightly slimmer than hardware store handles. Now, this is super cool because what it tells you, and when you look at what people kind of hammers they're using, you can kind of read it like a book in terms of how they swing. So if he's got a 2.25 pound hammer, that's generally on the lighter side of hammers. You know, Sunset was going to 3.5 pounds rounding hammer, and a longer handle. That means that you're having quicker, smaller hits with a little bit more velocity. So for making knives, especially, you know, drawing out the bevels, you don't need a big monster hammer. You're looking for a little bit more kind of lighter, smaller, faster, swings, right? Yeah. So then I talked to Fred Christ, who is a hero of mine. Fred Christ was the blacksmith. He ran the Samuel Yellen shop for 11 years. He is considered one of the best American blacksmiths. He's also a contemporary sculptor. And I took a class from him, and he's an astounding blacksmith. And what he said was, Jeff, I don't have a scale. I guess it's around 2 pounds, but it was made by me. It's an angled cross peen with a square face, long handle. It's one of those tools that you make, and it just feels right to work with all day. I made it 20 years ago. So when I know his hammer, and I saw his hammer, so his style of hammer is very similar to a Swedish style, where the face kind of flares out a little bit. And the interesting, so it's not too far off from what Lynn's using, which is his hammer is kind of similar to like that a German style, where it's a longer face, it's a smaller face, but the Swedish style kind of flares out at the face. Now the interesting thing is that he said an angled peen. Now you have to see the back side of a hammer or the peen side of the hammer as the fuller. That's the fuller. That's the thing that's going to move the material. So, you know, the face is usually a little bit on the bigger side, and then you have these angled, you have different sized fullers. So a cross peen, the fuller is side to side. A straight peen, the fuller is going up and down, and a diagonal peen is 45 degrees. Now, this is the reason why these peens are important, and I'm going to stop saying peens, and I'm going to start saying fullers. Stop giggling.
It's so, a peen, though. That's what the fuck it is. It's a peen.
I know, but it's, you know what? It's really not, though. It's more like, they call it a peen, but it's really a fuller. Because a fuller, so if you think, if all you young guys, if you, what blacksmithing is you're moving material. And if you were to take a piece of clay and you squeezed it between your hands, a flat, you know, between your hands, it's hard. But if you were to use your fingers and pinch smaller bits, it's a more aggressive way to move the material faster. So when you're using fullers, or the peen, you're actually taking smaller bites and you're actually moving a little material a little bit more aggressively. So if you have a diagonal peen, the cool thing is the 45 degrees allows you to, you're just holding it in different positions. Like the way you're managing hands holding the steel on the anvil, you're hitting it in a way where you're having a little bit more comfort in regards to where you're forging that material. So I, when I first saw a diagonal peen, I thought it was crazy, but then I used one, I was just like, all right, I get it. All right, so let's keep going.
Can I add another note about peens?
Go ahead.
So you...
I'm with you. Go ahead. Let me talk about the fuller. Come on, baby.
Or the fuller end of the hammer. So you said side to side and up and down. So in relation to the handle, that means it's perpendicular. The cross peen is perpendicular to the handle, to the alignment of the handle. And the straight peen is in line with the handle.
Right.
And then of course the angle is 45 degree, depending on right hand or left hand, one perfecto. Way or the other. Yeah.
Perfecto. So, I mean, you know, those kind of cross peens and straight peens, it's the direction is based on how you're holding it. So it isn't really like, so we're going to get into that a little bit more, but I'm going to just keep going. So I want to get this thing bowling. So then I reached out to Nick Anger. Nick Anger right off the bat goes 2 pound cross peen. So I think that his hammers are from the Center for Metal Arts. Pat Quinn, I think, makes most of his hammers. So now we're getting into something interesting. I contacted my friend Matt Paul of MP Knives, and he's a guy that you guys should really follow. He's an incredible bladesmith in New York. Matt Paul is awesome. And what he got very specific, he says that he likes a 2¾ to 3¼ cross peen with a 16-inch handle. He says, I like a subtle octagon shape on the face, slightly rounded to the face or the crown, 3/16 to 1/4 radius on the edges. Now, I'm going to get to what that is in a second. And then I like a 3/8 or 1/2 inch wide fuller or a peen. I know it's specific, but it's weird. So now, the reason why he likes a radius is on the outside of the face. When you have a hammer, a forging hammer in general, you don't want a very flat, a super flat face like a rock hammer, because you want it a little crowned. Because what you're doing is similar to a rounding hammer, but it's not as aggressive as a rounding hammer. So you want it a little bit, so your energy is in the middle, your middle hit. Now, if you have the sides or the edges dressed or chased, you won't be leaving marks on your material if you accidentally hit it at an angle. So like if you have a very square face, not a hand face, you don't want to be leaving choppy marks. So what these guys do is when you buy, even if you buy a hammer from a website, you're going to want to dress the face so the edges aren't too aggressive. You don't want them crispy. You want them kind of rounded so you're not, you know, making indentations. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Perfect sense. Now, how would you do that? You just put a file to that.
And grinder with a grinder.
Chamfer off those edges.
You take your hammer to the grinder, and then you just kind of round everything off. And then, you know, a lot of these hammer makers, they like to put a mirror polish on the face, and that's just a sell, and it's not necessary. I think that you just need to make sure that there are no big dents in your hammer. What you don't want are big dents, because every time you have a dent in your hammer or a nick or crack, you're going to embed that nick or crack in your hammer into whatever you're hitting, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So, and I'm almost there. We got a lot of, everyone jumped on, and some of this list is, you know, this list is great because it's great people. I wish I had more, but we only have a certain amount of time. This is only a half an hour podcast, right? So yeah, right. Then I reached John Ledford. John Ledford was the blacksmith that I worked under at the Center for Metal Arts, Fine Architectural Metalsmiths. He's the guy who taught me to be a working blacksmith. So we were doing a lot of ironwork, a lot of railings. We were doing real, like, working blacksmith stuff, not shoeing horses. We were making rails and stuff. So he likes a 3-pound cross peen, and he was very important that it was that the face, the crown, the face of the hammer was a 12-inch radius. So he's measuring that. He wants it very specific. He likes a thicker fuller, so it was like 7/16-ish, and he wants it. The handle to be around 11 3/4. So the radius of the face concentrates the force to the center of the hammer, giving you blows that move the metal instead of leaving marks. So that's what we said before. So now we're coming towards the end. I reached out to our boy, Alex Steele. Alex Steele reached out, and he says that he likes a 3.5-pound rounding hammer. He comes from that Brian Brazil school, and they like the rounding hammer. Good on you, my man. Oh, then, now we're getting to the end of it. I know, it's nice. Just crazy, this list. So then I reached out, and I can't believe it, Brent Bailey, incredible hammer maker, reached out, and he says, I'm partial to a standard 4.5 pounds. I prefer a 4.5-pound cross peen. I prefer a square face. Although I don't use the peen much, I like the balance. So, last two. Then I'm going to ask you, Mareko. So yeah. I reached out to my boy, he's more like my grandfather, Uri Hoffe, who's the builder of the Hoffe hammer, which is a hammer that has its roots in the Czech style hammer. He was an old teacher of mine. He and I have been friends for a while. And he goes, he writes me in all caps. He's like, he's yelling because that's what he normally does. He goes, thank you, Jeff. I'm going to speak it the way he would speak it. And he also writes, he types in broken English, which I love. Thank you, Jeff. The hammer in the photo is the cast hammer. That, for me, is the most balanced hammer. This is the one I forge with, too. All my other hammers are balanced, too. But the cast, I could design and arrange the form in the utmost balance. Thank you, and never stop. So he likes a 3-pound Hoffe hammer. He likes his cast ones that he had cast in 2001 better than the forged ones. It's just a little bit more balanced. And then he said, I'm collecting some more jokes for you, but some of them are nasty. I have this relationship with Hoffe. I was his student for a long time, and then I was his assistant when he was teaching at the Center for Mental Arts. And he would tell me he's been texting me these horrendous jokes that I can't even repeat for years. It's like, it's out of control. He loves sending me these horrendous jokes. Now
that needs to be a feature each week. Yeah. Hoffe's horrendous humor.
Oh my God!
Here's the problem. These are definitely not suitable for human consumption. These are brutal. These are brutal. There's a lot of penis jokes, and it's just, you know, it's fine. I love him. I keep him coming. He just turned 83. He knocked me out a cross peen on one of his hammers 3 weeks out of being in the hospital. He's a dynamite. He's an important part of the blacksmithing community. Regardless.
For sure.
So this is interesting. I got a hold of Jake Farum, and I'm going to leave it alone. I got a hold of Jake Farum. Farum Forge makes amazing hammers. He said this, and this was fascinating to me. He says, I'm a rounding hammer any day of the week. It is by far the most versatile hammer for general forging. I'm in complete agreement with what Brian Brazil says about them. Using angled hammer blows on a flat face yields you the same as a cross peen or a straight peen. Granted, you can't reach into nooks and crannies like a straight peen or a cross peen. It has far as movement of steel goes, it works the same. It's the Swiss Army knife of hammers. I'd have a 3-pound rounding hammer. And then he wrote this, which was interesting. I should mention that I like partnering up the radii of the rounding face with the horn of my anvil. So you know, this is the interesting part is, you know, when he's talking about this particular hammer, I know he makes some of the best hammers around. He likes a rounding hammer on one side, and I know he makes it with a kind of like an octagon side. The other side is octagon. So when he's saying hitting with an angle, what you're doing is you're not hitting it square in the face. You're using the angle of your hammer as like a fuller itself. And then what he does is he really trying to make sure that the radius of the crown of his, the face of his rounding hammer is the same as the of the roundness of the same radius as his horn of his angle of his anvil, so he can push material out. He can really kind of really use he can use them in accordance, and they're you're getting the same effect on both sides.
So just so I'm clear, a rounding hammer has two faces, but they're not both rounded, right? One's rounding,
right,
and one's flat.
All these hammers have a slight roundness to them. You don't want something that's super flat.
Perfectly flat, yeah.
So the rounding hammers are, generally speaking, one side's a little bit more pronounced. It's not like a ball peen, but it's like a little bit more pronounced, and then the other side is a little bit more for flattening, because you can't, if you're finishing, you're doing your planishing blows, you're doing your blows that kind of clean everything up, you can't use a rounding hammer for that. So it's one side's just a little bit crowned, like a regular hammer, and the other side is a little bit more pronounced, so you're moving that material outward from the blow. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know that was long, and I was just, these are some of the best in the world. Yeah, it is Jesus. You're right. I all of a sudden, I'm looking at my own clock. I'm starting to sweat. I'm like, I got to go through this list. This is unbelievable. But so one of the things that I will say about all these guys, they all do different things. A bladesmith and a blacksmith are forging differently. I didn't talk to anybody who has those Japanese dog head hammers. I just didn't really, my background is a little bit more blacksmithing, but it is interesting because if you really look into how people use their hammers and what they're using them for, how they feel most comfortable, it becomes something that you have to get comfortable with in regards to how you use them. And with that said, I think we need to finish with the great Mareko Momasi. What kind of hammer do you use?
So the hammer I use is actually kind of by default. It was a hammer that was given to me by David Lish, who's a blacksmith / bladesmith from Seattle in Washington. And so it was handed down. It's a 5-pound French cross peen, also known as a locksmith hammer, because it's got this little shelf. And so I was reading up on it, and the idea is that instead of it being angled from the top of the hammer and from the bottom straight meeting in the middle, it's got a little shelf, and that's so you can hammer up right against the wall of the box of a lock. And I'm talking about a traditional like blacksmith kind of lock that you see some of these guys on Instagram building. But anyways, I have a gentle radius on mine. I just used the slack like with a coarse belt to establish the radius and then clean it up further. But just on a slack between my, you know, top and bottom wheel. It actually has a quarter-sized flat area right in the middle of it. So if I want to do several planishing blows across the blade, I can get all kinds of nice little flat areas, just gentle ones. But the reason I work with such a large hammer is because most of my work is actually being done under a press or under a power hammer, a pneumatic hammer. And so I'm using my hammer to kind of dress and tune the profile. I do some bevel forging, but not a lot. But the cross peen is great for centering up the blade to the integral bolster, as well as the tang to the integral bolster. I use that for centering everything up when I'm doing the last bits of tuning. On the corners or the edges of the hammering face, I did dress that with a slight radius of about an eighth of an inch radius, so an overall quarter inch diameter. But you know, again, I'm not hitting with the edges. It's just in case I happen to hit a little bit with the face turned and I catch an edge, it's not leaving a super sharp angle in there. It's enough that I can clean it back up and dress it back out using the face.
Well, that's always the key. That's always the key for dressing a hammer. So you don't, accidentally mishit and put a big ding in your hammer. One thing that I was interested in is I started, and actually Hoffie he sent me a forge hammer that he made, and then he sent me a rounding hammer, and he just wrote to me. He says, "Try this rounding hammer off a lot of knifers." He calls knife makers knifers. He says a lot of knifers like to use a rounding hammer, and I actually used a rounding hammer to kind of pull the heel back a little bit.
Sure.
And I felt like I had a little bit more. I was moving the material a lot easier with the rounding hammer with the heel, as opposed to using, I thought that sometimes I was, you know, with the type of cross peen I was using, I was leaving a little bit too, it was too gougy. So I liked using the rounding hammer for pulling the heel of the knife back. That was a huge thing for me. And that's really what it comes down to, is especially when, Craig, you take this class, it's going to be, you're going to use the hammer that they give you, and then you're going to be able to kind of make the decision on how you mm-hmm. forge in general.
I'll tell you another note on my hammer, couple notes actually really quick. On my cross peen, along the length of the peen, don't laugh, it is actually, I actually also radius that just slightly. So it has, just a slight radius, so it's not perfectly flat across the length of the peen. And that also is for just in case, you know, you catch a bad corner. And then the corners, the edges of it are also rounded. Matthew Paul was talking about how he's, I don't know if anybody has said this, but I was turned on to the idea of squaring off actually the faces of my handle. So when I got it, it was, the cross section was actually like ovular, an oval shape. Hmm. And I was informed that I might think about trying to flatten, essentially the sides and the faces of it, not all the way to perfectly square, but just a little bit, have some flat. And the way it indexes in my hand now, I feel like I have so much more control over it than when it was perfectly ovular. It doesn't feel like it slips as much at all, actually.
You're
at
absolutely
all
right.
anymore. And it feels like I don't have to think, I don't have to fight it to keep it in my hand anymore. And that has been a huge game changer for me in my forging, is having those faceted essentially faces. I'll have to take a picture and I'll put it up on Instagram.
Well, that, you know, the first time I ever saw that was Fred Christ was teaching a class, and he had his hammer, and he had put an octagon, he had cut like an octagon shape in the profile of his handle, and I was just like, what the fuck is that guy doing? And I took a look, and I tried it, and that is something, and a lot of guys do that now. Like, I know that when Pat makes his hammers, he has an octagon. John, Ariane, and Cliff, they make hammers, they usually have a little bit of octagon. And it does, it takes a lot of stress out of your wrist, because you're not gripping it as hard to make sure it doesn't slip in your hand.
Exactly.
And that's something that's giant. So what I actually did was, it doesn't have to be crisp octagons, but just slight. I just kind of put some flats in the sides and in the backs, and then I rounded them just a little bit so they wouldn't be so kind of rough in my hands. And that, just even a subtle slight octagon in your handles, it gives you, it's a lot more ergonomic, because you're not fighting your wrist as much.
Yep.
You're not fighting the grip. You gotta grip that peen, baby. You gotta grip. Oh, we're done with this, baby. Jeff investigates gripping that peen, baby. Get that peen going. Come on, baby.
Well, Jeff, cheers.
This was
a simple question, and you've investigated the hell out of that one.
Next week's investigation is gonna be very. It's gonna be one. It's gonna be like, yep, that's it. Investigated. Cool. Can I just add one quick thing while you figure? If you're saying, you know what, I hear what he's saying, I want to buy a hammer. The two important things are, and no, it doesn't really matter who, most the prices of forging hammers, and I'm not going to tell you where to go. You can buy hammers that are pre-made, or you can go contact some of these guys, and they make the prices for hand forged hammers are not that far off from a decent priced hammer that you would buy at a store. If you decide that you're going to buy a hammer, when you go to one of these blacksmith places online, get yourself a hammer, and the most important part is dress the faces of the hammer. Dress the faces. That's like giant. Don't start forging. Make sure that you got a little bit of a crown in the face. Make sure that there's no sharp edges on the peen and on the face. And you know, work on that handle a little bit. Give yourself a little. Put a little octagon in that handle just to make sure you feel comfortable swinging it. And then, you know, if you got to do it, that's what you do. But I will say, most of these guys who do make hammers, the prices are not crazy. They're very reasonable, and I would definitely buy a hammer from any of those hammer makers that I mentioned.
And especially when you think of how long that hammer is going to last. You know, even if it was $200 for a hammer, the fucking thing's going to last, outlive you. So
that is pretty much the going rate for a lot, like a two to three pound hammer from a forge guy is going to be around $200. And that's not crazy. Like if you buy one off the, you know, from a website, it's going to be around $100. But if you go from a guy who makes them, you know, it ain't crazy. It's worth it.
Yeah.
And would you get them pre-dressed then?
Or you can't trust anybody. I got some petting houses from somewhere. And the first thing I did was I just dressed the corners and I made the handle just a little bit more. I took that slick, whatever that stuff is they put on it, and I kind of just made it a little bit more. I customized it a little bit. And, you know, you start to realize what you like and what you don't like, and it's definitely worth it.
Cool. Okay. But that leads us on really nicely. So Mareko was talking about handles and putting a bit of an edge on them. So, you know, good for indexing, that kind of thing. But we've had lots of questions in the forum about people asking about handles and knives, you know, and how you sculpt your handles and that kind of thing. So there's lots of really great answers there. But I'm going to take one question, which is on a similar sort of vein, which is, how does the physical attributes of a knife translate into the performance and the function? So what do you guys think?
I'll start this one off. So I actually get a lot of people, you know, you look around on other forums like kitchen knife forums or something like that, and just talking with other people, and you see all kinds of stuff on Instagram. And there are two basic camps. It's like thin to win on one side, and then you have kind of the more robust stuff on thin to win on the Japanese side, and then more robust stuff on the European side, especially like German manufacturer chef's knives and stuff like that, even the French stainless. And the reality to me is like the steel kind of informs what the edge is actually capable of doing in a way. And one of the things when I was working with Neil this last couple weeks, he, you know, one of the first questions he was asking was about geometry. Like, what do you got to do? Does it have to be super thin at the spine? Does it have to blah, 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 blah? And I was like, you know, I've found that for me and my, like, I come from a production background working in restaurants, and I didn't work in anything fancy, but, you know, I definitely stood behind a knife prepping for hours on end for close to 8 years. And for me, I needed a knife that took an edge, kept the edge, and cut through food easily. And for so I think that when it comes to geometry, the most important portion is what's happening from the edge to about an inch above the edge. And then from there, it can almost do whatever it wants from within reason. And just to start, or to give a couple of quick examples. So my knives are actually, they start at about 130 thousandths, 140 thousandths, which is just barely over an inch or eighth of an inch. And then it tapers down pretty dramatically. So I would consider my knives definitely on the thinner side, and they cut great. But then you look at Don Nguyen's knives, and they're almost on the complete other side of the spectrum, where they're almost close to, they're probably just under a quarter of an inch, and then they taper down nicely. But the edge geometry, what's happening from that edge to about an inch above the edge, is where all the magic happens, and his knives cut beautifully. He's definitely, I would say he's definitely top five, and most likely actually top three people whose knives I would love to have. But if you looked at them on a geometry spectrum, his knives are almost completely opposite from mine.
Would you say when you're talking about that first inch, you're kind of also hinting at the whole, that's one of the reasons why a lot of people use an S grind, because the S grind gives you that food release, but it's really kind of, you don't really need to fool around too much because you're dealing with that inch.
Yeah. And it comes down to how, like, what the knife is trying to do. Like I use the S grind because a lot of people I'm selling to, they're looking for that, reducing the friction. The biggest thing that S grind really helps do is reduce friction. It does help with food release as well, but more than anything, it helps with reducing friction. So that means when you're cutting up and getting up into thicker part of the cross section of the blade, you're almost running into no material. So you're only really doing the cutting work with the first maybe inch or so of the knife down by the cutting edge.
So there's no drag when you're cutting through.
Yeah, so you're reducing the drag dramatically. But still, with like a with a workhorse style geometry like John Wayne. It sounds like I'm trying to say John Wayne. It's still, you know, it's a great geometry that it still is going to blast through food all day, still be super comfortable. The friction, in my experience, I've used his knives to cut through sweet potatoes, which is a pretty dense root vegetable, or tuber, whatever you want to call it. Anyways, and it cuts beautifully. I love it. And so, Jeff and I have talked about this before with our friend Tim Musig about, you know,
JB Prince.
What's the best chef's knife? What's the best chef's knife? And it's, you know, it really just depends. It just depends on how you use the knife and what you're looking for. But geometry, I think, just to go over to my geometry, I think it doesn't get above 50 thousandths of an inch on my knives until about halfway up the, or half inch to 5/8 of an inch up the blade from the cutting edge. And then at the cutting edge, it's about 5/1000ths of an inch before I sharpen. Because of the way I heat treat my blades, I like that, just that little bit of extra meat, but it just cuts great.
Okay. And what about the physical attributes, if you like, of a handle? I mean, there's so many different types. And again, to bring Toma back in from Florentine, on this documentary he had this week, he mentioned that he really doesn't care about ergonomics of a handle. And I completely understand that because, you know, you're going to use a knife in many different ways, particularly in the kitchen, you know? So what do you feel about sort of, you know, super sculpted stuff? Or I've seen a lot of sort of faceted handles at the moment as well. What are your thoughts on them for two of you?
I'll jump in really quick again, hopefully really quick. So for me, the ergonomics and the level of sculpting on a handle matters a lot, because that's where the relationship with the blade is. I can understand where, you know, the blade's the business end. That's the more important part. But if you don't want to hold on to the knife, like, what's the point of having a shitty handle? I think mine are highly sculpted, but I go to an extreme end of the spectrum for sculpting handles. I think a lot of people, you can actually get, I've felt a lot of handles that feel really nice and comfortable with maybe like a 1/4 inch radius around the shape of the handle. It doesn't have to be crazy contoured. I think that's just my own thing. And then when it comes to faceted, I've been using the faceted for a couple of years now on knives, and they are surprisingly comfortable. And again, it comes to kind of getting rid of anywhere there might be potential hot spots, and essentially that's like a sharp corner rubbing on your hand and making things uncomfortable. But as long as you do that, I think that's great.
I like simplicity. I like, well, for my, I'm not sentimental, so I really try to really make something on the simple side and, you know, easy to go with. And I've been changing my handles for a long time. Back in the day when I first started, I was making these big, thick, heavy handles. And as time goes on, I go smaller and smaller and smaller. And I just try to make them very simple. I've changed my handles to the point where I think that they're comfortable holding in a pinch grip and holding in the slicing grip. And I just kind of try to make it very simple. I want people to, you know, put their hand around it, but I go for simple. And then what I do like to do is, I do like to, when I do the kind of WA style handles, I do like that octagon, and it brings me back to when I used to make, you know, with my forging hammers, I liked the octagons. What was that?
Whoa, sorry. Carry on.
What was
sorry.
That? What the fuck was that?
You shooting laser guns over there?
That came from you. What was that?
It did. It's a bit of a jingle. We've got one coming up.
Another
got
jingle. Oh, you go, Walt. Here comes another jingle. Yeah, so octagons for the WA style handles. Done. That's it.
Excellent, excellent. And if anybody wants, you know, there's lots of answers there in the forum. So if anybody is more concerned about, you know, handle styles, that kind of thing, jump on the forum. Lots of great answers. This half an hour show is over an hour already. All right. So we're just going to pop through two more sections quickly.
Are you going to put a jingle in?
Craig's Community Showcase.
Oh, my God. This is too much. That's something. What you were, your, you know, so this is the great part. Something. When I was talking, you obviously had your finger over it. And you had your finger over it, and you were ready to touch it. And then all of a sudden, you accidentally didn't you?
Driving the desk, man. Jeez. Driving the desk. So this is just going to be a very quick weekly thing of a community showcase. So we've all got these platforms where we can show our work. But occasionally I come across somebody who's got great, great work. And they just don't seem to have the followers, or, you know, they don't seem to be recognized by the community for the great work they're doing. So today's is a French guy. I've never met him, just come across his stuff on Instagram. So it's Michel Greeny. So his handle there is Michel, so it's M-I-C-H-E-L, underscore Greeny, G-R-I-N-I, underscore Couteau, with an X on the end.
Nice.
And he makes these amazing, amazing folding knives. So over here in France, folding knives, you see them everywhere, Laguioles and Thiers and Perigord knives. They're everywhere and they're beautiful. But this guy's stuff is just another level. He has these amazing hammers on them. And he just doesn't seem to be recognized in any way. So if you just Google Michel Greeny knives, you're going to see them.
Is he on Instagram?
He is, yeah. Michel underscore Greeny underscore Couteau. Amazing stuff, amazing stuff. So go and follow him. There'll be a link in the show notes as well, so you can go straight there. But if you think there's anybody within the community you think isn't being recognized for the amazing work they're doing, let me know and we can just highlight them on the show.
Nice.
I just went and followed him.
Community showcase.
I love it. Yeah.
Just like that one.
So
right?
That means we've both had our own little section.
Yeah.
So that means there's one left.
Oh, no.
There's one left. We've got one more jingle to go.
Oh, no, not another jingle. Go ahead.
Road to Damascus.
Wait a second. Was that a fart in the beginning?
It sounded like a little bit like some tooting.
And can I ask you a question? Was that your wife?
Sure.
Was that your wife?
It was. So she's been roped in.
So let's just get this thing clear. She's just out of the hospital, 2 months bed rest. You stick a microphone in front of her face, and you said, "Love, would you mind if recording Marekko's Road to Damascus?" And she has to say, "Yeah, well, this is what I signed on for."
She needed direction. There's a lot of direction there.
Oh, I bet there was. Marekko's.
It's Marekko's.
This poor woman, your poor wife has to deal with your nonsense. All right. Go ahead.
Okay, so Marekko's Road to Damascus. I want to stick with this kind of hammer thing that we've been talking about today. Yeah. And I actually think this is the first time we've done this segment. I'm already going to change it. I'm going to change it to
no problem.
Notes to a Young Knife Maker. And that way
a new jingle.
Oh,
we need a new jingle.
Oh, I can't wait.
Great.
I look forward to it. All right.
Amy,
so notes.
Amy, you're going to get roped in again.
Yeah. So notes to a young knife maker. Essentially, these are kind of like pointers and tips that, I've thought of, like, if I had to hire somebody or when I do hire them, like, what kind of pointers and tips do I have? Also, I get tons of people asking me questions about where to start and all that kind of stuff. And we've all kind of talked about that before. But this to stick on kind of the hammer discussion that we had and forging, I get a lot of people asking about where to start forging, blah, 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 take classes and stuff like that. And forging is great, but it's also extremely difficult. And I actually encourage people to start with stock removal, because what's more important for a knife is that it's well ground rather than if it's forged or not, because especially if you're new, it could be some of the stuff damage that you could do to the steel by overheating it or hitting it too cold, or all kinds of stuff can happen when forging. I think forging, I'm not saying don't forge ever, but I advise people to start with grinding. And I think the reason I like people starting with stock removal and learning how to grind blades is because it actually gives you a target at which to shoot for when you do start forging. So it's easy to actually take forging sometimes too far or not enough. And so there's a lot of work that needs to be done after you're done forging, or there's not enough material left after you're done forging. But if you start with stock removal, you have, it gives you a concept, an idea of where you want to be aiming for when you actually do start forging, when it comes to the actual shape, what kind of cross-sectional thickness you're looking for, if you're going to do kind of like a brute to forge finish on the blade, how far to take that before just kind of leaving that area and grinding through the rest of it. So today's note to young knife maker, you know, if you've already started forging, good for you. If you haven't started, I would advise, and it's not just young, like anybody new to the craft, essentially. I would advise get on a grinder with a piece of steel and practice some grinding first, and that'll give you an idea of where to go when you start forging. There you go.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Ooh. Mareko's note to a knife maker.
Boosh. I think that's a show. I think we've got a good show there. So, again, jump on the forum if you've got any more questions for next week. Thank you to our sponsors, Even Heat. And next week, we actually have an offer for anybody looking to buy an Even Heat. Mm. We've teamed up with one of their distributors, and we'll be able to get you a very healthy discount on a new Even Heat kiln. So make sure you listen next week for those details. Is that it? Do you think we've covered everything?
I mean, how much more can we go?
Oh, well, exactly.
I mean, we could go a lot longer, but you know, you only have so many jingles, right?
Exactly. Well, I can do as many jingles as you like.
I bet you can. You're going to be sending me jingles all week. Ah, I'm going to be so mad. Irritated, baby. Outrage.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.